I looked right at him, and I thought, you'd be the type. The right age range, the quiet type, perfectionist, the type who blends so people don't really see him. Son of a bitch. Dallas, he went into the foster system as John Church in 2003 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Age 5, no parents or guardians on record, found wandering alone in a churchyard. Adopted in 2005 by Elise and Lloyd Dauber. I've got his education, medical, criminal, and at a glance, nothing pops. He moved to New York in 2016 to attend Columbia, got his advanced degree in forensic chemistry, and has worked for the NYPSD lab since 2025. Address. Yeah, Lower West. He could walk to the lab. What kind of building? Take me a minute. Rourke walked back in, still talking on her link. He gestured to McNabb, got a nod. You've done very well indeed. The feed's on your screen now, queued up as we discussed.
This is so exciting. Your accent just slays me.
You and Carrie have been an enormous help. You have the code for the lieutenant's unit in the corner there for receiving, so now you only need to click send.
Here goes. Did it work?
It certainly did, and thank you. The lieutenant's going to be busy for a while yet, but she'll contact you tomorrow.
This was fun.
Eve ignored Rourke as he stepped out again to end the conversation and watch the feed. Son of a bitch, she said yet again, as Andrew Dauber walked into view. He looked harmless with his round face, his pressed khakis, the shy cherub smile. He went directly to the nail products. No browsing, no distractions. Eve watched Carrie, salesperson of the month, cross to him. Need any help? Eve thought. Can I show you something? Quick, friendly conversation, and she found the color for him. She gestured, probably trying to make an upsell, but he just smiled, shook his head. Back to the sales counter, check his license, chatting, her chatting, him smiling. Take the cash, make the change, bag it up. In and out under 4 minutes. He doesn't waste time. Friendly, but not memorable. But Carrie remembered enough. It's an apartment building, Dallas. Multi-unit. A deli and a convenience market street level. He's on the 5th floor. I don't see how he got 3 women in there and held them. A basement. Maybe he has access to the basement. Rents it so he can close it off. But it didn't feel right. Yanking out her communicator, she contacted Jenkinson. He said, Yo. We've ID'd him. Andrew Dauber lives Peabody. Peabody rattled off the address. Hey, not Andy Dauber, the lab nerd. Yeah, him. Well, son of a bitch. I know that son of a bitch. He's worked for the department as long as I have. Maybe longer. You want us to go get the fucker, boss? No, I want you to back us up when we check out the apartment building. One possible is he has the basement for his prison. He'd need to get them in and out, hold up to 3 women there. Doesn't gel. No, but we check it out. Where the hell are you? At the Blue Line. We just ordered burgers. We'll put a hold on that. Meet you there. 10 minutes, she clicked off. McNabb, suit up and get a vest for the civilian while you're at it. She considered a moment, then tagged Feeney. He also said, Yo, I've got an ID on the whack job, the investigation I had Jamie work on. Boy, did all right. More than. I need a van. I've got 2 E-men with me. I want eyes and ears. I've got an address, but it doesn't feel right.
We need to cover it.
I'll get you one. Who's your man?
Dauber. Andrew Dauber from the freaking lab.
Andy? Are you fucking kidding me? God damn it. I'll meet you with the van in the garage in 10.
I've got Rourke and McNabb. You don't need to.
I know that son of a bitch.
When her screen went blank after Feeney's outrage, Eve shrugged.
Okay, we've got 3 E-men.
10 minutes, she muttered, and contacted Mira. She said,
Eve, what can I do for you?
We've got an ID. Solid. I've got a team heading out to his residence in 10, but it's an apartment building, and he's on the 5th floor.
Does he have a private entrance? Adequate space?
5th floor, so doubtful, but we'll check. It's Andrew Dauber.
Why is that name vaguely familiar?
Forensic chemist, employed by the NYPSD.
Ah, of course. I've seen his name on countless reports. Forensic chemist. Precise, focused. While he works with the team, he does his work primarily alone. He'd know how to prepare a body to remove any trace evidence that could lead back to him. I'm just pulling up at home. Do you want me to come back?
Not until we have him. I'm hoping that's tonight. If he slips by us, we'll take him when he gets to the lab in the morning. I'm hoping tonight.
I'll join that hope, and I'll be there when you have him. Covino will undoubtedly need some counseling. Good luck to you and your team.
We'll take it. Let's move out, she said when she clicked off. She looked at Rourke. You'll be taking a little detour before I give you that ride home.
19. She contacted APA Cher Rio on the way to the garage.
I need warrants. Search and arrest.
Elder and Hobe?
Yeah, we've ID'd him, and we're on our way to his address of record.
How solid?
It's a fucking rock. We've got more to add to the reports I've sent you. He was found, abandoned, at age 5, some miles from where the mother ended up living the rest of her life. He fits the profile down the line. And we have him on security feed purchasing the nail kit in color with a fake license from a vendor in Brooklyn yesterday. That's after he gave us incorrect data on said fake nail.
What do you mean he gave you the data? He's a forensic chemist at the lab.
Son of a bitch! Phrase of the day, Eve agreed, as she tried to ignore the cops crowding on the elevator.
Andrew Dauber.
Dauber? Seriously? We've used his testimony more times than I can count, and that's just since I came on. He's the perfect expert witness.
Jesus. We're going to have a slew of defense attorneys filing to have his testimony tossed.
That's a problem for later.
Oh, yeah, it is. I'll get the damn warrants.
Fucking Dauber. Eve nodded at her link when the screen went blank.
She's displeased.
Crap, I'm going to need to brief Whitney.
She slid a glance toward Peabody, who immediately hiked her shoulders to her ears, aimed puppy dog eyes, and shook her head.
I'll do it, I'll do it.
But Eve blew out a breath first, then took another. Let that one go before she made the contact. She saw, immediately, he was in some fancy bar. She heard the murmur of other patrons in the background, the laughter around his own table. He might have appeared relaxed, but he still radiated that force of command.
Lieutenant, excuse me, he said to his companions, and leaned over to kiss his wife's cheek. She also looked displeased. I'll only be a minute.
He rose, began to walk through the bar.
A big man with wide shoulders, dark hair cropped close and threaded with silver. I'm sorry to interrupt your evening, Commander.
I assume you have reason to.
Yes, sir. She waited while he made his way through the bar area of a restaurant where everyone looked elegant and some guy in a tux opened the door to an outside area where other elegant people sat with sparkling drinks. Whitney stepped away from them.
And it is?
We've identified the suspect in the Elder and Hobe abductions and murders and the Covino abduction. I have a team ready to go, and APA Rio is securing the proper warrants. I'll update my report to you with the additional evidence that led to the identification. He nodded.
Very good. I'll pass this along to Chief Tibble. We're having drinks, or will be. Is there a reason you need to inform me of this at this moment?
Yes, sir. Finally, Eve got out of the elevator and into the garage. We have considerable, and I believe conclusive, evidence. The target is Andrew Dauber.
Excuse me?
Dauber, sir. Forensic chemist in our lab. And one assigned to analyze evidence in this investigation.
Whitney said, "Son of a bitch!"
Rourke waited until she'd finished, until they stood by the van parked behind her car. He gave her shoulder a quick rub.
"That went well enough."
She rolled her shoulders, circled her head. "Okay, that's done." She looked at Feeney with his baggy brown suit, his crooked tie with its latest stain, his hound dog face an explosion of ginger hair, and the bright neon light of Jamie beside him.
"Really?"
Feeney jerked a thumb at grinning Jamie.
"He earned it."
"He earned it," Eve agreed. "Now I have 4 E-men and 4 other cops to take down one crazy mommy-whacked scientist."
"Where are the other 2?
Feeney asked. "Probably sitting on the apartment building by now. Jenkinson and Reinecke. Everybody in, let's move." "They're not gonna be there," she said as she boosted herself into the van. "It doesn't play out." "Unless..." She shook her head as Feeney took the wheel, Jamie got in beside him, and the others settled into the back. McNabb and Rourke at the equipment. "No, hold on. Jamie, come back here and do the E thing with McNabb. Rourke, start running another search on properties. Same basics with the building, but plug in these names or derivatives. Lisa McKinney, Violet Blank, Violet Fletcher, John Church, Andrew Dauber. Could use place names, maybe. Bigsby, Arcadia, Tennessee, Alabama, Louisiana. Peabody, dig up the name of the church where she left him, and we'll try that, too. He could use Andrew McKinney or Lisa Church, any combo, okay? I've got it. Setting it up now. I want to look for heat sources in this building. Focus on the basement if it has one, and in this sector it's likely. Also focus on Dauber's apartment. If we hit, we'll need eyes and ears. We need to move him away from Covino or any other woman he might have grabbed since. We secure the civilians, secure the suspect.
Short drive, Feeney announced. I'm putting us at max distance for the heat search. He'd recognize an E-van or give it a hard eye if he spots us.
You got it, Jamie. Run it.
Frosted.
Your detective's coming up on the cargo doors, kid.
At Feeney's alert, Eve got up, opened them. Inside.
No movement we've seen in the apartment windows, Jenkinson told her as he parked his butt on one of the bench seats. We've been here maybe 5 minutes.
Guess you're sure it's him.
Damn sure.
He shook his head.
You think you know somebody.
since his tie, wildly colored gumdrops over blinding white, hurt her eyes, she focused on Jamie. Anything? Got a basement. Got one heat source, northeast corner. Moving around and... walking. Carrying something by the arm position, west and up.
Laundry or storage area, Reinecke said. Or both. Betcha.
Following the heat source, and it's heading straight up. I'd say an elevator now. Exiting, third floor. Moving north. Turn, and into a space with three other sources. Two of them probably kids from the size. No keeping women shackled up in an area with that kind of access. Move to his apartment.
Fifth floor, Jenkinson told Jamie. Front facing, on the right over the deli, second and third windows.
Changing scan. Nobody's in there. There's the warrants. Peabody, with me. Jenkinson, you and Reinecke take outside doors in case. Feeney, if you spot him heading home, beep my comm twice.
Will do.
She hopped out the back, then pointed at Jamie. You, put on a recorder. Grab a can of Sealit and bring it along. His eyes popped. I'm going in? Whoo! If you're looking at this like an adventure, toss me the sealant and stay in the van. His Christmas morning eyes went immediately sober. Got it, sir. The target wasn't on the premises, Eve concluded, so he had another hole, a bigger one, a private one. And that made the warranted entry and search a training exercise. Record on. We have a warrant to arrest Andrew Dauber and to enter and search his residence and his lab space when we get to it. Entrance has passcoded locks and cams. We'll want that feed. She mastered through the locks, ignored the elevator in the small, tidy lobby, and hit the stairway. Heat source scan showed no occupant in Dauber's apartment. Heat source scan indicated community area, so not conducive to hiding and holding abductees. Conclusion? Me? Jamie blinked. Okay. I'd conclude the suspect isn't here and has access to another property where he's holding Covino and held Elder and Hobe. Use their names, Eve thought, as they reached the second level, continued up. Good. If he's not here, why are we going in? To see his space, how he lives, and, more important, to look for evidence of the abductions, the murders. Most important, to find anything that leads us to where he's holding Covino. Finding her and getting her to safety is numero uno. Affirmative. When they came out on five, Eve turned to him. We knock, announce ourselves, and we go through the door exactly as we would if the suspect were inside, which means Peabody and I take the door and you come in behind us. Because interns aren't issued weapons. Affirmative. You stay behind Peabody while we clear the apartment. At the door, Eve kept one hand on her weapon, knocked with the other. The door across the hall opened, and a woman with a pudgy little dog with bulbous eyes and pointy ears stepped out. The dog yipped once, wagged its stub of a tail. He's just saying hello. From the open doorway behind her came the sound of pipey voices, kid voices, arguing passionately. Our boys having their nightly battle. Pugs and I are leaving the field to their dad and escaping. Anyway, Gina and Jan aren't home. They went out to meet some friends for dinner. We're here for Andrew Dauber. Mr. Dauber? Jamie caved, crouched down to pet the dog, who'd pranced over to sniff his kicks. He moved out months ago. Sweet man. Quiet, but never complained about the noise the twins can make, and he always had a treat for pugs. He no longer lives at this address? Not since... She pushed at a mop of disordered brown hair. Well, before Thanksgiving, anyway. Do you know where he went? Did he leave you any contact information? No. Belatedly, she closed the door at her back, and her eyebrows drew together. Why? Eve took out her badge. NYPSD. We need to speak with Mr. Dauber. Well, he works with the police, right? Science stuff. Yes, he does. This is the address he has on record. Oh, I guess he didn't change it. Strange, as he seems so organized. Sorry, I just know he moved out. You know, I think it was before Halloween, now that I look back. Yeah, sure it was, because Gina and Jan got all costumed up and had candy for the twins before they went to a party. You haven't seen or spoken to him since he moved from the building? No, I... Not spoken to him, but I saw him out walking, maybe from work. He liked to walk around the neighborhood. He was across the street, though, so I didn't talk to him. Does he have a vehicle? You're not going to tell me he's in trouble. He's such a nice man. The dog, now blissfully on his back, got an enthusiastic belly rub from Jamie. Ma'am, Sherry Wozinski. Ms. Wozinski, it's important we locate Mr. Dauber as soon as possible. Does he have a vehicle? No. At least I never saw him driving. I don't know why he'd have one, since he can walk to work in a couple of minutes, and otherwise, he didn't go out much except to take his walks, go to the market, the usual. Did he have visitors? No, not really. I don't remember seeing anyone go in or come out but Mr. Dauber. What do you think he's done? I can't imagine him doing anything against the law. Was he friendly with anyone in the building? The neighborhood that you know of? Someone who might know his new address? No, not really. He was the quiet type, kept to himself, and... Her whole being went from baffled to panicked. Oh, God, that's what the neighbors end up saying about axe murderers. Could we speak to the twins' father a moment, in case he has any information? Yes, sure. I don't think he does, but... She pulled a key out of her pocket and, unlocking the door, poked her head in. The fight had turned to hysterical laughter. Wozinski lifted her voice over it. Brad, come here a minute, will you? Eve ran through the same routine, received basically the same responses. Mother died in September, Eve said, as they started down the stairway. Rich mother, guilty mother, suicidal mother. I bet she left the three children she had as Violet really well set. And I'm betting she did the same for her firstborn. Enough for him to buy a house. Something private, Peabody said. Something with a basement or attic or an area he could use as a prison. It's going to narrow the search. He moved in before Halloween, and she died September 18th. That's the window now. She signaled to Jenkinson as she headed back to the van. When she stood on the sidewalk, thinking before she briefed them, Rourke, Feeney, and McNabb got out to join them. He moved before Halloween. Neighbors don't know where, but the woman across the hall saw him walking. She thinks maybe to work after he moved out. He didn't move too close, or they'd probably have seen him more than one time. They said he liked taking walks, and they have a dog, so walks. She scanned the buildings up and down the block. It's not going to be too close to his old place, but close enough he can still walk to work if he wants. And it's familiar. The Lower West is familiar. He got a place the private residence between September 18th and the end of October. Mommy left them some scratch, Feeney put in. I'm betting on it. Finds himself a house. Could be a warehouse, a storage facility. But why? Why not be comfortable? House is still first on the list, but the search is for ownership to begin in September. I'll adjust it, Rourke told her. If we hit on anything tonight, I'll pull you back. Are you working from home? Peabody asked her. Central for now. I need to...
Central it is.
Jenkinson jabbed a finger. Boss, you're gonna work it. We're gonna work it. That girl's been locked up a damn week. We got a chance to find her tonight. I want to take it. Go get your burgers, and I'll keep you in the loop. Even as Jenkinson folded his arms, put on his just-try-to-budge-me face, Rourke stepped in. It happens we own a pub right down the block there and around the corner. I'll wager no one's had a meal as yet, so I can work on this search, the lieutenant can do what she must, and all can have that meal. Together, he added with a glance at Eve, so it saves time when we locate him. Feeney punched Rourke's shoulder. The Dubliner? That's yours? Why don't you tell me these things? He asked Eve. Prime eats, prime brew. It makes sense, kid. Good time management. Fine. Leave the rides here, on duty. He's not on this block. If we don't hit by the time we've had the prime eats, everybody goes home.
Hey, what if he's still at the lab?
Eve flicked Peabody a glance. He clocked out at 16:43. I checked with security before we moved out.
Oh, well, sure.
So, we've got ourselves a good deal.
Jenkinson looked back at Rourke.
I don't guess they have actual cow meat.
They got it,
Feeney answered first.
Costs you right nut, but they got it. They do one hell of a fish and chips.
My pub, my treat, Rourke said as they began to walk.
You should come on ops more often, Jenkinson told him.
Yeah, he's got nothing better to do.
We're gonna need a table where we can bounce things around as they come, and I need to update my...
We've a nice, roomy snug.
Rourke snagged Eve's hand before she could stop him.
Not to worry.
Roomy and snug are opposites.
Feeney just shook his head at Jamie.
You've got a lot to learn, boy.
They rounded the corner.
So, can I get a brew?
No,
Eve and Feeney said together.
You're underage. Too young,
Feeney said, and you know it.
If we're working, nobody gets a brew.
At Eve's statement, Feeney sighed.
That's a damn shame.
People packed the outdoor tables and the interior hopped. The music piping through the speakers plastered a grin on Feeney's face, and the air smelled of prime eats. A waitress with a bright red braid and a face full of freckles paused with a tray of pints on her hip.
Good evening to ya. We've got you all set up in the snug, sir. I'll take you back as soon as I've served these pints.
I know the way, thanks.
Well then, I'll come around and take your orders before you know it.
Is that accent real? Eve wondered as Rourke wove the way through tables and around a long, busy bar.
It would be, yes. She's from Cork, if I remember it right.
He opened a door, herded them in, closed it. The noise level dropped by half. It proved a roomy snug, with what looked like three smaller tables pushed together to make one. The space included a one-person workstation, a wall screen, a wing chair, and a low sofa. The sort that whispered, "Nap here." The table already held two boards with rounds of brown bread, dishes of butter, three large bottles of water, and wedges of lemons and limes.
Okay, I get roomy. Jamie immediately attacked the bread. Why is it a snug?
A cozy sort of place, Rourke told him, and private. Well, back in the day, a place where those who didn't want to be seen lifting a pint could drink. An old tradition, mostly abandoned now, but I like the idea of it for this place.
Frosty!
He slathered butter on the bread, devoured it, then grinned at his godfather.
Prime!
Eve sat, took out her PPC, and got to work.
I can write it up.
She shook her head at Peabody. I've got it.
Then can I take 5 minutes to consult with McNabb on the tile so we can put the order in and not break the sacred pinky swear?
Without looking up, Eve held up 5 fingers while the other cops and the intern talked about the menu. The waitress popped in.
I'm Maura, and Jack will be along, and I will be serving you tonight. Now, what can I get you fine officers of the law to drink this evening?
Coffee, black, Eve said, again without looking up. As the orders went around and Maura gave her spiel about specials, Jamie dropped into the chair beside Eve.
So, what's the story with Quilla?
Why?
Wondering.
Now Eve looked up. You're too old for her.
Come on.
Too young for a beer, but too old for the cute girl? Yes. Go away. Working. By the time she'd written the report, sent the update to Mira, the commander, and Rio, the waitstaff had not only served the coffee, but brought in a coffee service for easy refills, and were busily taking orders.
And what's your pleasure tonight, Lieutenant?
She hadn't thought about it or glanced at the menu. Burger's good. Burger and fries, thanks. He'd want top security, she said to Feeney. Any place he'd use to hold these women, he'd need it secure. Maybe he had a new system put in or added to one.
We can work with that. Jamie, start looking for permits. Issued after September 18th on security systems. Start top line, work down. Stick to the sector, then spread out.
Eve looked down the table at Rourke, who seemed deep in a conversation with Reinecke that didn't look like cop work.
The search!
It's running.
You should try the fried clam table appetizer, Rourke advised. It's lovely.
Eve looked at the trio of nearly depleted dishes, considered what clams looked like before frying.
No.
There's the plumbing angle, too. Rourke poured himself more water.
If I wanted to cover my tracks, remain as much off the grid as possible, and needed such things as new security and plumbing, what have you, and had the resources of someone who'd worked with the police for near to 4 decades, I wouldn't go through proper channels. If I couldn't manage the work myself, I'd hire those who wouldn't quibble about permits and such.
Jenkinson gestured with a fried clam before he popped it in his mouth. That's a point.
Crap.
It's a good point. So good, she had to stand up and pace. Yeah, he knows how not to leave a trail or to cover it up, make it hard to spot the tracks. And yeah, he's worked with cops, observed cops, knows the process.
But he's not a cop.
And he's pretty damn new at being a murderer. He slipped up with the fake nails. Then he had to regroup and try sending us in the wrong direction. She grabbed her cup, walked over to refill it from the station.
He slipped up once, Jenkinson said. He slipped up somewhere else. We just haven't hit it yet.
Damn right. He's a creature of habit, a perfectionist, obsessive. He plans and plans, carefully, but the plans have to fit the obsession. He saw these women because of his habits and routines. He likes to walk. He could have seen Covino countless times, given where she lives in connection to his apartment, his workplace. The other two, still lower west, but a longer walk east. Possibly he didn't spot them until he moved. Putting his new hold farther away from the lab, Feeney put in. He likes to walk, and he'd have more reason to after September, after the break. Now he's hunting. She started to ask Rourke to put the wall screen on so she could bring up a map and look again, and the food came in. Let it sit, she ordered herself. Just let it work around in there until something else breaks through. For a few minutes, while the waitstaff served, the snug turned as noisy as the main pub. And she had to admit, the smell of food, those prime eats, rang all the happy bells in her empty stomach. She sat again, loaded her food with salt before taking a bite of her burger. She pointed at Feeney, who was digging into his fish and chips. You know him. Work know him. First word that springs to describe him. Feeney swirled a forkful of fish in tartar sauce. Nebbishy. That's the word.
It is?
Like, you know, timid on the geek side.
You asked.
I did. Same, Jenkinson.
Reliable. Always came through with the goods.
I get the nebbish, but it's a Yiddish deal that can mean indecisive or awkward. Awkward fits well enough, but not the indecisive part. Timid, awkward, yeah, and reliable.
Okay.
She ate a fry, decided it was a potato miracle, so ate another. How about you, Reinecke?
First two are taken, so I'm saying exacting. Couldn't rush the guy, but when he finished, you had it all spelled out.
And Rio said he's a stellar witness in court.
Peabody?
Peabody paused over her own fish and chips.
I only met him those couple of times, but I'm saying soft.
Soft?
Soft eyes, soft smile, soft voice, kind of a soft manner, and no accent. He's from the South, but not a trace of it.
You don't blend as well with an accent.
I guess you don't. Have you got a word?
Alone. The way he got flustered when Harva went into his space in her Harva way. He's used to being alone. So, a soft, nebbishy, precise, reliable loner. He has to keep them in a separate space. Jamie had nearly polished off a burger the size of Kansas and seriously depleted his mountain of fries. You put all those words together like you did? He can't have them in his space. He needs his own. He probably has a routine worked out with them. Feeding times and all that. He'd need to spend time with them, or what's the point? But they're not in his space, his area. Basement's still the best bet.
Feeney smiled a proud smile over his chips. Agreed. It's a damn house with a damn basement and damn good security.
Rourke picked up the PPC he'd set on the table, studied it.
I believe it is, yes.
And we've a solid hit.
You found him.
I have. I agreed with your conclusion that someone so obsessed would have to use his mother's name or some derivative of it, but found nothing there. Then it occurred to me, he continued, rising to set up the screen, that someone like him, as you all just described, might be clever enough to hide that. An anagram. I ran for anagrams of his mother's birth name. Anagram? Mixing up words to make other words? And Lisa McKinney becomes Cammy and Ken Snily, so a couple rather than a single. He brought up the map. Cammy and Ken Snily are the owners of record as the property transferred into those names on September 25th from a trust held by the law firm of, McKinney and Son. He did the anagram, and one of them made up the name of the law firm. Likely him again. Eve studied the map. Highlight the other areas, crime scenes, residences. She wanted to make it up to him somehow. She came to New York, bought the house for him, and sent him the paperwork before she took the pills. I'm betting Cammy and Ken also have a fat bank account opened around the same time. She'd want to give him money to maintain the house, to make up for all those years. Already looking for that, Feeney told her. Didn't want him to have to pay estate taxes, he continued as he worked, or wait to claim the house until the estate settled. That's my guess. And didn't want her other children to know, Eve finished. Couldn't face that, even at the end. Can you get blueprints? Rourke sent Reinecke a put-upon look. And listen how she insults me after we've had such a pleasant meal. No permits applied for, Jamie said. Not for that property. Rourke probably hit that one. He slid around permits. Moments later, the blueprints flashed on screen. Fucking A. Look at the size of that basement. What's the date on these? March of last year, when they were generated for a rehab. A house sale, I'm thinking. And on the market, I'll wager we'll find, just in time for his mother to buy it. You see, there's a small kitchen on the basement level, and two full and two half baths as well. One of the baths to make a master suite. No windows but for this eastmost wall in that suite area. Must have that for code, you see. There's your way out in case of fire, for instance. And I expect your way in. He may have blocked it off. Or it's something she can't reach, something she can't get to. Blocked off, maybe. Privacy screened, absolutely. Don't want anyone getting nosy enough to look in. Stairs leading up, almost center of the big-ass basement. Doors on the main level, front, back, both sides. Another door, second level, to a porch thing, deck thing. Stairs down to what looks like a little walled-off courtyard. Yes, it's a very nice property. Okay, he's gonna have cams, solid security. He's crazy, but he's not stupid. She stood a moment, hands in pockets, studying the blueprints, working it out in her head. All right. Here's how we take him down. 20. Before. She couldn't sleep. Not with a bed so empty beside her. She was a doctor's wife and had often slept alone when Joe's duties had kept him late into the night. But he'd always come home, and she'd always waked, at least enough to turn to him, to reach for his hand. He'd always come home. Until that horrible night. How could she sleep knowing he'd never come back to her? Everything about her had been wrong before, Joe. She knew that now. Everything wrong, everything bad, every mistake, so many, too many, had rushed back into her. And all of it so raw, so real, flooding over her like the waters of the lake where she'd tried and failed to end her own life. She'd left her little boy. She'd actually thought to kill him, to take him with her into the dark.
Oh, God, what did that make her? The sweet, sassy baby darling she'd failed in so many ways. No, in every way, she thought yet again, as she stared out the bedroom window at the gardens she and Joe and then their children with them had tended for so long. So many years among the flowers, under the Spanish moss, in the beautiful old house. Breakfasts in the kitchen. Off to school now. Learn something today. Sweet tea on the veranda. Picnics on the lawn. Quiet nights loving Joe while the children slept. Birthdays and skin knees, squabbles and bedtime stories. Graduations and weddings, her babies, beautiful babies. And she'd left her little boy alone. She'd washed his face and hands in a service station bathroom that smelled of piss-soaked heat because she'd traded her body for pills instead of a motel room. He'd been angry, whiny, so her head felt as if it would split. Why shouldn't he have been, when instead of a bath and bed, she'd taken the oxy and gas money so she could move on? Just move on. How could she have loved? And she had. Oh, she had loved her little boy. And been such a terrible mother. Because everything about her had been wrong. She'd known it. Finally accepted it, and determined to end it. But she hadn't taken him with her. She'd left him at that church. There'd been hope. She hadn't killed her baby. Only left him and forgotten him. Forgotten it all, as if it had never happened, as if Lisa McKinney had never been. And been reborn with Joe. By Joe. For Joe. Now he was gone. And all the years, so many years, she'd been a good wife, a good mother, a good person, a caring, loving, productive woman. Gone with him. Violet had been stripped away to Lisa. Lisa didn't deserve those years of joy and comfort and love. The selfish, foolish, reckless girl who'd abandoned her own child deserved nothing. And the Violet who remained couldn't live with it. How could she tell her children, their children, she'd built their lives on a lie? Maybe if she'd remembered it all when Joe had still been alive, they'd have found a way. He always found a way. But he was gone. Her North Star had flickered out, and she couldn't find her way any longer. She wandered the room, touching photographs and the memories they held. The candlesticks that had been Joe's grandmother's, a strong, proud woman who'd given her a pair of diamond teardrop earrings on her wedding day as something old. The vase she'd found in Venice on their honeymoon. The trinket box, wonderfully gaudy, the children had given her for Mother's Day so, so long ago. Precious things. Those pieces of the life she'd lived. Violet's life. But Violet couldn't exist, not really, without Joe. She'd walked the house earlier. Before all the children came for dinner. A last supper, she thought. She couldn't do so now, not with Joella staying over. If Joella heard her, she'd try to comfort, and she'd worry. But she'd walk the house, the gardens, said her goodbyes. She'd fed her children a big, happy meal. She'd hugged them, held them. Now, she set out the letters she'd written each of them. They'd grieve, she knew,
But they'd forgive her. Forgive Mama. And their lives would go on. She could be proud of that. Proud there had been something strong and good in her. Something Joe found in her that helped her raise such fine children. Nothing of Lisa in them, she thought. Only Joe and Violet. She'd written to her son, her firstborn, the little boy she'd deserted. So strange, so odd, so disconcerting to see him, a grown man, a gray-haired man, a scientist. She'd thought to go to him, to speak to him, to tell him everything face to face. But she hadn't found the courage. But she had to leave him something, had to make up somehow for all those lost years, for the fear he must have felt, waking alone on the steps of the church. She'd bought the house, not as big as the one where her other children had grown up, but a lovely old house, a solid house, still close to where he worked. She'd opened a bank account for him and arranged it all so he could simply move in or sell the house if it didn't suit him. She'd sent all the paperwork just that morning, with a letter confessing, explaining, or trying to. Would he forgive her? Maybe one day. But she felt Violet had done all she could for Lisa's baby darling. She was a doctor's wife and knew how many pills to take. She got into bed, the bed she'd shared with Joe for a lifetime, and began to take them, one at a time, letting each one settle. When she felt drowsy, she took more. When it was enough, she set the glass aside. When it was enough, she lay down, stretched a hand out to Joe's side of the bed, imagined him taking that hand in his. She sighed once, said, "Joe," and finally slept. Now, Mary Kate heard the footsteps overhead. He was back. Very deliberately, she sat in the reading chair, picked up a book. She accepted Anna was gone. He'd moved her, or he'd killed her. He'd do the same to her eventually, unless she found a way out, and she'd gotten nowhere on that, or held him off long enough for someone to find her. Holding him off meant placating him, playing a role. She'd damn well do just that. If she could find a way, she'd kill or disable him and pray he had the key to her chains or a link she could use to call for help. She had food, she had water, she even had a decent bathroom. And she had, she constantly reminded herself, a brain and a spine. So she sat in the French-cut pink t-shirt and cropped pants. Not her style, a little on the rich matron side for her, but comfortable. She had white skids, no laces. If she'd had laces, she might have tied them together and tried to strangle him with them. He'd probably thought of that. He had a brain too, but there was something really wrong with it. He'd grown up in the South. She'd figured that out. The man didn't have an accent, but when he reverted to the kid did. A twangy one, whiny and twangy. Maybe she could use that. Maybe. What she decided she could use and would was her own mother. How her mother handled her and her siblings. Patient, firm, some humor, and a lot of "don't push it, kid," or "pay the price." When she heard the locks give, she gripped the book tight, made herself breathe, made herself smile. He had a sour look to him, but she kept the smile bright.
Hi, welcome home. How was your day?
He stared at her, and the sour look deepened. I had a very difficult day.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
She set the book aside as if she wanted nothing more than to talk to him.
Tell me all about it.
Why would you care?
Of course I care, baby darling. You know what you need. You need a snack. Let me fix you.
She started to get up, trailed off, then settled again. Added a self-deprecating laugh.
Sorry. Tell you what. Why don't you fix us both a snack, and you can tell me what happened to make you unhappy?
She lifted her free hand, waved a finger. No sweets now. Not this close to dinner. He continued to stare at her, but she saw what she thought was interest and a touch of slyness come into his eyes.
I want a cookie.
She let out a big sigh.
Was it really that bad a day?
Yes. She held up the finger again. One cookie. The sour look vanished. He went into the kitchen, opened one of the cabinets. From her angle, she could see he'd loaded it with snack food, kid food, bags of cookies, chips, candy bars. He took a bag of cookies out.
How about a nice cold glass of milk to go with it?
At her suggestion, his face went fierce, and the accent crept in.
I want a soda pop!
Fear clawed in her belly, but she channeled her mother, sent him a cold stare. I understand you had a bad day, but you'll watch your tone with me, young man. When he goggled at her, she inclined her head as her mother might have done. Now, apologize and ask properly.
Don't wanna!
Then we have nothing more to say. With her heart pounding against her ribs, she picked up the book and pretended to read while the words blurred. In the silence, she heard his rapid breathing and forced herself not to look up when it dragged on.
I'm sorry, Mommy.
She looked over to see his head hanging, chastised.
Can I have a soda pop? Please, please?
It took her a moment because her throat didn't want to work. Just this once because you've had a bad day.
Yay!
He went to the mini-fridgey. Some juice, she noted, a container of soy milk, and heavy on the soft drinks. Aren't you going to get me one? He bounced on his toes like a child.
What kind do you want, Mommy? We got all kinds.
Tilting her head, she tapped a finger on her chin, watching him, watching his every move and expression. Well, since we're going to have ourselves a little pre-dinner party, I should have my favorite.
Cherry Coca-Cola, you like that best.
Despised it. I sure do. She got up, moved to the bed, and patted the space beside her. Now, you fix us a nice snack, then come on over here and tell me all about the bad day.
Kay, it was bad, and they keep asking questions. I did everything right.
Of course you did. The man came back, and she found herself much more frightened of the man. I did it all perfectly. Why do they care about a fingernail? Why did they even notice when I did it all perfectly? It had to be perfect. Had to be right. I take pride in my work.
Of course you do.
What did it mean? Keep him talking.
You're so good at it. You're the best.
The man looked at her with glittering eyes. How do you know?
You went away. You left me.
I'm so sorry, baby darling. I'm so sorry I went away. But I'm here now.
You left me.
and I couldn't find you. He began to tap his fist on the counter. You forgot me. You never tried to find me. I'm so ashamed. It wasn't hard to work up tears. I'll never forgive myself. How could I forgive myself? All I can do is try to make it up to you. Try to be a good mommy and take care of you and be here and listen when you've had a bad day. I had to pretend to make a mistake. I don't make mistakes. But it was just pretend. It's okay to pretend. I don't make mistakes, he repeated. So they won't find out because they'll believe what I said. Absolutely. They'd be mean to me if they knew. But the others, they were wrong. They made mistakes, so I knew they were wrong. He studied her like something smeared on a slide under a microscope. Maybe you're wrong, too. There's another. I'll bring her home tonight. She could be the right one. Mary Kate went with instinct, took the risk. What a thing to say! I said I was sorry. I'm trying to make up for it. But you're hurting my feelings anyway. I'm the only one. She knuckled a tear away. I made an awful mistake, but I'm trying so hard. Don't cry, Mommy. I want us to be happy together again, and for you to believe me and let me fix you snacks when you come home. She looked over at him. Let's not be mad at each other. Let's have our party. You don't have to talk about the bad day because we're going to have a good one, you and me. Do you promise? She patted the bed again. Come on over here for our party. We'll play a game. A game? Let's see. What kind of game should we play? The boy was back as he hurried over with the cookies and soda. She wondered what sick war raged into his head to cause him to flip back and forth. But she thought, hoped, she could handle the boy. She nibbled on the cookie, though her skin crawled when he snuggled up beside her. We could play See It. Remember when we drove and we'd play See It? I see a red car. I see a flagpole. That's a good game. She took another bite of the cookie. We could use things in this room and... Oh, I've got a game. A memory game. Like a child, he ate the cookie greedily. A memory game. This'll be fun. A test of my powers. She wiggled her eyebrows, laughed. I have to close my eyes, and you take everything out of your pockets and put it all on the table there by the chair. Then I get to look for 3 seconds, you count it off. Then I close my eyes again and have to say everything you set out. What's the prize? What's the prize? Well, okay. If I don't remember every single thing, you get another cookie. Holding back disgust, she tickled a finger at his ribs. What if you do? Then I get another cookie, of course. I want the cookie. Then you have to play the game. I'm gonna win. Close your eyes. No cheating. No cheating, she promised, and saying a quick prayer. Closed her eyes. In the van, well out of camera range, Eve studied the screen while McNabb ran the heat source search. 2, basement, almost dead center. Run the whole place, she told McNabb, but that's going to be Dauber and Covino. If he'd grabbed another, she'd be down there somewhere. Rourke? Finishing the analysis on the security system, but yes, we can take it down. He'll be smart enough to have an alert down here, or on a link or device if anything goes down, glitches. We don't risk that when he's with her. Christ, all but in her lap from how it looks. Sitting, McNabb confirmed, hip to hip. No other sources down there, none on the main level. Moving up. Jenkinson, Reinecke, are you in position? Back wall, out of cam range, but we've got a decent angle on the house, Jenkinson answered. Hold there until the go. We need to get him upstairs, away from her, then take down the security. Covino's priority. You can get over the wall? I can scale a damn wall. Jenkinson's insult came through as clearly as his voice. She's center of the basement level now. If that changes, we'll relay new position. Get over, get in, get to her when I say go. The house is clear, Dallas. It's just the two of them in there. He's moving. Just a few steps. Jamie, if you've got a single doubt, say it. I'm good. I've got this. He's gonna see you. Watch you. Maintain. You get him up to the door, we shut down security, we move in, and you get out of the way. Copy that. Jamie's a go. He'd picked up the stack of flyers they'd designed and printed out. After getting out of the van, he walked up the sidewalk into camera range, then turned to the house. Feeney, he'll handle it. He's the only one of us we know Dauber won't recognize. Doesn't look like a cop yet. Cop's in there, but doesn't show yet. Everybody hold. In the basement, Mary Kate scanned the items on the table. A link, a set of old-fashioned keys, a swipe, an ID card, and Jesus, a mini taser. A folding knife, loose change, wallet, a white handkerchief. Three! Close your eyes! Close them, Mommy! She even put her free hand over them. Okay. Boy, 3 seconds isn't long. She remembered every damn item but drew it out. A link, a wallet, a hanky, keys on a ring, a swipe. Oh, I know there was more. Wait. Darn it.
I won!
If there was anything stranger than seeing a grown man with a little pudgy middle dance and spin in circles, she'd yet to see it. He dashed over to the kitchen for his prize. She had to get the link, the keys, the taser, the knife, keep him occupied. Let's play again. It can be your turn to test your powers. She jolted when something gave out a loud buzz. What's that? Scared me. Anyway, someone's at the door. His voice had gone flat. She had to stick her hands under her legs as hope trembled through them. Oh, one of your friends? Maybe they want to play too. I don't have any friends. Because they're not worthy of you. Go on up now, she said when the buzzing came again. Tell them to go away. We don't need them, right? They'll go away. I won't answer. He stepped over, brought up a small screen. It's just some boy. He'll go away. But the buzzing came a third time. Baby darling, go up and tell him we're busy. Go on now so I can set up for your turn. He needs to go away. Dauber stomped to the stairs and up. The minute the door closed, Mary Kate leaped on the link. Security locked. She dropped it, grabbed the keys. One of them had to open the shackles. If she could just stop shaking long enough to use them. He's heading up, Jamie. Get ready. Rourke, the minute he opens the door, you'll have it. Jamie heard the locks turn. The door opened a crack. Go away. Sir, he added a southern drawl to his character.
I'm sorry to disturb your evening, but Peppa's missing. My dog. She's just a little dog.
He held up a flyer, let that southern boy's voice shake with tears.
We just moved in today. Down there?
He gestured.
I'm not interested in move from South Carolina.
Jamie rolled right over Dauber, talking fast, looking directly into his eyes.
And she's lost. She doesn't know where she is. I'm afraid something. Please, mister, would you take a flyer, please? Peppa, she's still just a puppy, really, and it's my fault she got out. Please, sir.
I haven't seen your dog. But Dauber opened the door another inch to take the flyer.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
And Eve kicked the door all the way open. Police! Put your hands up, Dauber. He shrieked and ran across a dimly lit, empty foyer. She could have stunned him with the weapon in her hand, but opted for a short chase. He had some speed. He whipped left into a big, empty room toward a side door. Her hard tackle had him skidding over the dusty floor.
Mommy! I want my mommy!
He beat his fists, kicked his feet, shrieking in a voice she wondered didn't shatter glass in a radius of 10 miles.
She's gonna beat you up!
Yeah, I don't think so. Eve yanked his arms behind his back, slapped on the restraints. Andrew Dauber, you're under arrest for the murders of Lauren Elder and Anna Hobe, for the abductions of Same and of Mary Kate Covino.
I hate you! You're a bad girl!
Bet your ass I'm bad. Rising, Eve stared down as Dauber sobbed and thrashed. Got him, Peabody?
Yeah, I got him.
Jenkinson, target secure. I'm heading your way.
Copy that. Had to bust the damn window, but we're through. Mary Kate? Mary Kate Covino! Police! We're the police!
She stood, shackles on the floor, keys clutched in one hand, the little taser in the other, and looked ready to use it. Jenkinson holstered his weapon, held up his badge, as his partner did the same.
It's okay now, Mary Kate.
Jenkinson softened his tone.
We're the cops. It's okay now. You're safe now.
Her breath heaved and hitched before she dropped the taser. She made a limping run to Jenkinson, threw herself at him.
Please, please get me out of here. Get me out.
That's what we're gonna do. Don't you worry.
Eve reached the steps to see Jenkinson stroking Covino's hair as she wept on his shoulder.
Bring her up this way. It's clear.
Still clinging to Jenkinson, Mary Kate whipped her head toward Eve.
Did you catch him? Did you find him? He's insane!
We have him, Eve assured her. He's secured. We're going to have you transported to the hospital and—
No, please. No, please. I don't want to go to the hospital. I want— God, I want my mom. I want—
She buried her face in Jenkinson's shoulder again. Mary Kate. Eve came down a few steps. Cop Central's not far.
It's not? Where the hell am I?
About 6 blocks from where you live. How about we take you to Central, and I contact your mother, your family, your roommate, anyone you want. We can have a medical look you over there.
Please. Okay. Please. Can you take me out of here?
Jenkinson, take Mary Kate into Central. Stay with her. Cloak the board in the conference room. Use that. Reinecke, I'm gonna need you here on the search for now. Start on the second floor.
You'll stay with me?
Sure I will. I bet that ankle's sore. You lean on me now.
With a sob that ended on a sigh, Mary Kate leaned on Jenkinson. She looked at Eve.
There was another woman here, at least one other. Her name was Anna. That's all I could hear. I think he killed her. I'm afraid he did.
We'll talk about it. Eve walked down as they walked up. When Rourke came down a few minutes later, she stood at one of the cells. I'm going to contact Louise. She's closer than Mira for a physical exam on Covino. Mira'll handle the rest, but her wrist and ankle looked rough. Three cells. Two more like this. She gestured, and he'd have used the bath and the bedroom suite deal to clean them up. He has a workspace set up in there. A long table, all the hair stuff, makeup, the tattoo kit and so on. Wardrobe in the closet. She got the keys from him. I need to ask her how the hell she managed to get him to set down the keys. A knife that's likely the murder weapon, a taser. A mini wouldn't do much, but still. How the hell did she get him to leave all of that within her reach? She must be a very clever woman. She outwitted him. So did you. On our part, good cop work. On hers, that's grit. Smarts, yeah, but grit. I'll have to go in, talk to her. I may want to pass at Dauber tonight, we'll see. Either way, it's going to take a while. Because she had a recorder on and he knew her standards, he didn't touch her. You know I'm going with you. Figured, but just wanted to point all that out.
Dallas?
Peabody called from the top of the stairs.
He has an office set up on the second floor. He had more targets lined up. You're gonna want to see this.
On my way. She looked again at the windowless room with its narrow cot, the shackles bolted to the wall. Grit, she repeated. 21. As she walked from the basement level to the second floor, Eve contacted Louise D'Amato. Hey, Eve said, when Louise, blonde hair loose and wavy, came on screen. I need a favor. I'm in a very good mood, so inclined to give one. Where are you? Walking, Eve observed. Street noises. Enjoying a slow walk home after a lovely dinner with my sexy husband. Louise aimed her link over and up, so Charles came on screen. Hey back, Lieutenant Sugar. Good moods all around, Eve concluded, for the doctor and the former licensed companion turned sex therapist. How about grabbing your medical bag and making a detour to Central? Louise angled the link back, and the dreamy light in her gray eyes vanished. Who's hurt? Female victim, Mary Kate Covino. Minor physical injuries, primarily contusions and lacerations on her wrist and ankle. I could call the MTs, but she's gonna feel more comfortable with you. Is this connected to the two women who were murdered? She would have been number three. We got him. Good. We're nearly home. I'll get my bag. Thanks. I'm putting her in a conference room on my level, and Jenkinson's with her. Peabody's gonna clear it so you can go straight to her. He had her a week, Louise. Understood. Mira, I'm calling her in. Also good. I'll see you soon. Peabody, clear them through, she said when she clicked off. She stepped into a large room with an attached bath. It had big double windows, privacy screened, facing the street. She wouldn't have called it an office, but an HQ. He had boards set up, one for each victim. Photographs of them at work, on the street, shopping, drinks with a friend. Timesheets, she noted, studying them one by one. Logging